This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
How much we're prepared to spend to maintain the royal family. And I find it interesting that in a nation and in a global economic climate where people are cracking down on people who use state money.
Laurie? It looks like she just froze on that little video stream there that we had, speaking to Laurie Penny, the writer and journalist whose work frequently is in The Guardian and New Inquiry and elsewhere. Her latest piece, The Babies We Don't Care About Today. She's author of the book Penny Red, Notes from the New Age of Dissent. This is Democracy Now!, and that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Sharina Nadura, Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, Christian Goff, and Vesta Godarz, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Krug-Meadows, Ra Campenny, and Carlo De Jesus. Go to our website at democracynow.org. You can see the transcripts of every show. You can listen to every show. You can watch it, and you can tweet about it. Go to our Facebook page. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic will be Stand Your Ground Laws and the George Zimmerman Trial.
Air Cascadia, half an hour of news in 15 minutes.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. It's the end of the news as you know it.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Friends of KBOO, supporting locally produced, organically grown, homemade programming for Portland and the world. Thanks KBOO for 45 years of music, current affairs, and live broadcasts. Friends of KBOO can be reached at 503-788-2533.
Eyes and the twisted mouth. magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and
well,
the great Billie Holiday.
Yeah, Strange Fruit. You know, I first heard that song when I was a teenager.
You know, I did too.
Interesting.
So did Engineer Steve.
Well,
we all heard it when we were teenagers.
Three guys moved by a song by a black woman whose life had been very hard.
Indeed.
You wanted to talk about this Stand Your Ground stuff, and I find it so depressing. I should just say right off the bat, get it out of the way, that this is KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Yeah.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Yes, again.
That's Abe Proctor, and I'm Joe Uris.
Hey, you're 4 for 4, man.
Yeah, 231-8187.
Look at that.
That's the number to call. We're going to talk about, I'm going to make a little announcement because I think it's important, but we're going to talk mainly about what's going on with this Stand Your Ground stuff and what its origins are and what it did in this case and how much longer will America stand being covered with injustice based on race, class, and status. All right.
Yeah.
So what, Zimmerman?
Make your announcement.
All right, I'll make my announcement. Zimmerman's innocent. That's not my announcement. Portland Rising Tide is a kind of cool, newer organization that's trying to deal with the planned export, already underway to some degree, but the planned export of massive amounts of fossil fuels, specifically coal and oil, coming down the Columbia River Gorge or up the Columbia River Gorge and terminating at various locations, particularly Boardman and Vancouver, Washington, and Clatskanie. And at Vancouver, Washington, they're actually going to run the same kind of coal trains, basically, that did the big explosion in Canada. That's cool. They don't worry. It's not their property. Anyway, so this is a thing that has gotten more and more concerning. Basically, there's something called summer heat. Well, this Saturday, July 27th, 350 Portland, PDX, on the Columbia River. If you have a kayak or a rowboat, or you can stand up on a board without falling off, you can go down to the Columbia River. This workshop's on Saturday, starting from 10 to 12:30, and there'll be speakers and all that, and then at 1:30, you take to the waters underneath the I-5 bridge and blockade the river, for real. But, of course, it's on a Saturday, so it probably doesn't matter. But they'll blockade the river, and hopefully it'll get a lot of national and local publicity.
Yeah, way to set up this great protest event and say, oh, it's Saturday, so it won't matter.
Well, I'm sarcastic. I hate the fact that peace marches, protest marches, and so on are often arranged on the weekend so everybody can come. But, of course, it means that everybody who would be inconvenienced thereby isn't there frequently. But, nevertheless, you should know, all of you in the audience, that there's a planned oil train project, a huge project. Tassadero is the company going to do it. Burlington Northern and Santa Fe Railroad going to terminate at Vancouver. Huge numbers of oil tankers. Little tanker cars, and then it all gets transferred to big ships, and it goes overseas, and it makes highly polluting electricity, and then it comes back here in the form of toxic chemicals, even if the oil doesn't spill into the Columbia or into Vancouver.
That's capitalism, man.
Well, yeah, it's progress.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Anyway, Bill McKibben is a leader in this movement. I'm really hoping that there's a huge number of people out there to watch and to participate in the river, and that the blockade is effective, even though I guess blockading the river on a Saturday doesn't do much for the shipping.
Okay.
All right, so that's the thing to do. That's what you want to do on Saturday, especially if the weather's going to be nice.
Yeah.
Being on the river is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You could just go out there and kind of play like it's a bathtub, a cold bathtub.
Right.
All right, so I'll see you all Saturday the 27th. Oh, let's say that we have a meetup and we are out there, 1:30, 2 o'clock. Just...
Okay.
It's right under the plate location. Actually, I should tell people the location. Yeah, the actual location is under the I-5 bridge. Where you meet up is at 100 Columbia Street in Vancouver.
Okay.
All right.
There you have it.
I did that.
Okay.
All right.
So you probably have heard this. Week before last, George Zimmerman was found innocent of the murder of young Trayvon Martin in Florida.
Well, Trayvon had a gun.
No.
Oh, he had a knife.
No.
He had Skittles.
He did.
Okay, and Skittles, man, that's a deadly long-term weapon.
A can of iced tea. I, for one, am relieved because this is a shining example of how our justice system works. The jury made a decision with the facts it had at hand, acting on instructions from the judge, considering the facts of the case and the letter of the law. Really, they ruled in the only way that they could. So the system works. Zimmerman is innocent. Young Mr. Martin is unfortunately dead. But, you know, that's the price of justice.
Well, what's interesting about it, beyond the fact of the outrage of it, is that essentially the instructions of the judge, which excluded all of the behaviors of stalking that Zimmerman did leading up to the altercation, was not allowed in court. And the judge essentially said to the jury, look, what she really said was, look, this is a case of stand your ground. And the jury, dutifully following the rules of stand your ground laws in Florida, said, oh, now, Zimmerman's innocent.
Well, yeah, he was. Hey, that's the law.
He murdered the dude.
No, he didn't. He's innocent.
He blew the guy away.
No, he's innocent. The jury ruled he's innocent. They acquitted him. Here's what happened. George Zimmerman's a member of the Neighborhood Watch in this gated community in Florida.
That's not true, actually.
Really? I've heard that over and over again.
Well, it's not true.
Oh, okay.
He was a volunteer that nobody wanted.
He's a volunteer that nobody wanted.
Yeah.
All right, but assuming some vigilance on behalf of himself and his neighbors.
Well, he doesn't live there.
Looking out for his fellow citizens.
Well, okay. In general, that would make anybody able to shoot Trayvon Martin.
Well, you know, there are certain among us, often with an excess of testosterone, who take on that necessary burden of protecting those who can't protect themselves. George Zimmerman's a hero, man.
He blew away a kid.
Well, no, let's walk through it. All right.
Okay.
So Zimmerman's driving along, and he sees a young Mr. Martin, 17. A dark-skinned youth, it must be said.
With a hoodie.
Wearing a hood.
Well, there you go.
You know, there's a few legitimate functions for wearing a hood.
To
keep the weather off one's head. And far more often, especially in the case of dark-skinned youths, in order to conceal one's intentions. And perhaps,
how does a hood conceal one's intentions?
Well, you know, it helps guard one from unwanted scrutiny.
Wait, you're wearing a hood and nobody scrutinizes you?
Well, they can't see who
you are.
But
Zimmerman scrutinized him.
They can't see your face, right?
Oh, okay.
So the dark-skinned youth walking down the sidewalk, wearing a hoodie at night. Clearly Zimmerman was concerned.
Hey, look, he bought Skittles, which is, the corn syrup does to your mind.
Well, that's true. But at this point, let's be fair. Zimmerman could only have suspected that Trayvon was packing Skittles and a can of iced tea.
Right. And besides, what was a black kid doing in that neighborhood, even though there are a lot of black people?
Well, yeah. It's a gated community. The gate is supposed to keep people out.
Well, yeah, but right? but his father lived there.
Well, Zimmerman was just looking out for people. Okay. So he's driving along. He sees this kid. And so he does what any responsible, concerned citizen would do. He called the police. And he described to the police the young man walking down the street.
Yeah, and he said the young man walking down the street was, I believe, he used the N-word.
Yeah, he used some words we can't repeat on the air here.
Yeah.
He also commented to the 911 operator that that these people always get away with it.
Yeah, they
or
always
something
do.
To that.
They
you
always
know,
do. That's why the prisons are
because
full of black people.
Full of people who, in their private lives, wore hooded sweatshirts.
Yeah.
You know, they always get away with it, the hooded sweatshirt wearing dark-skinned youths of America.
Yeah.
Right. So he called the police and reported this suspicious activity. The police said, you don't need to follow him. Actually, they asked him first, are you following him? Zimmerman said yes. The police said, okay, we don't need you to do that.
Yeah, so stay in your car, they said.
Stay in your car, they said.
Yeah.
So Zimmerman, like I said, a law-abiding guy, looking out for the best interest of his community, ignored the advice of the police and continued to follow young Mr. Martin.
Well, he didn't have to be afraid because he was packing heat.
He was. He was, damn it, packing heat because he is an American and he has the right to pack heat.
Oh, yeah.
So he had a concealed 9mm pistol.
Yeah, I like
with no safety because that just slows you down.
Well,
and when
yeah.
you're dealing with hoodie-wearing people, you want to be fast on the draw. This
Especially
is all common
skinny
sense. 17-year-olds. Why are you even arguing with me, Joe?
I'm not arguing.
I mean, the
I'm
facts of the case are clear.
I just find it. I think having a 410 shotgun, sawed off in your pants is a good idea too.
Are you speaking metaphorically here?
Well. You'll only find out when I take it out.
I'll
show you my shotgun.
I'm both intimidated and strangely aroused.
Oh, this is sick.
All right, let's continue with our narrative.
Let's get back to our narrative here. Please.
So Zimmerman, ignoring the police's advice to stop following young Mr. Martin, continues to follow him.
Yes.
Eventually gets out of his car. And approaches young Mr. Martin.
And Martin gets a little nervous about this.
He does. In fact, he places a call to his girlfriend
on
his cell phone.
Yeah.
In which he mentions the fact that there's this this grown man following him. And his girlfriend advised him to run. Mr. Martin said, no, he wasn't going to run, but he was going to walk fast.
Ah.
So he did. He started walking faster.
See, compromise is what killed him.
Right. So Zimmerman, of course, continued... picked up his pace as well and continued to follow the kid. Eventually reached him, confronted him, and began a physical altercation with him.
Yeah, we don't really know anything about what happened except Zimmerman's story because only dead men tell no tales.
This is true. Yeah. Even dead men wearing hooded sweatshirts.
Yeah, yeah.
Dark-skinned ones.
Yeah.
All right, so it's important to remember one very salient fact here before we go any further. Zimmerman felt threatened by Martin.
Why?
Well, because of all the things I've just described.
Oh, you mean he wore a hoodie and he was
dark-skinned? Dark-skinned, wore a hoodie, walking on the street at night.
Didn't belong in the neighborhood.
Yeah, had a sweetened beverage and a bag of candy.
Yeah.
Those five facts, I would be nervous.
Well, the
you?
Corn syrup alone.
Well, yeah. You know how kids act when they're hopped up on corn syrup? Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, as we can see, Zimmerman... clearly felt threatened not only his person but the other residents of the community.
Oh yeah,
right. So Zimmerman provoked this confrontation, or maybe he didn't. Maybe Mr. Martin did. Who knows? We don't really know.
We'll never know.
We never know. There was a tussle. The two men wrestled. They went to the ground.
Well, maybe they wrestled.
Maybe there was some sort of physical altercation.
Yeah, there was a struggle.
And in the course of the struggle. Zimmerman's weapon was discharged.
No, man, he shot the weapon. It wasn't discharged. No passive voice.
How do you know?
Well, he shot the weapon because he had the weapon. He shot it, and the other guy's dead.
Well,
that's
you
couldn't surmise.
You want to use plain language.
Well, it went off. You like a passive voice? It went off.
All right. We'll accept your premise.
Okay.
Zimmerman shot Martin through the heart and killed him.
Yeah.
And then...
With a 9.
Right.
That's a big
gun. Subsequently went to trial.
Yeah. Well, first, this is important. First, one officer said, well, let's arrest this guy. And everybody else said, oh, no, you know, because it was a guy with a hood and he was dark skinned.
Right. So actually, Zimmerman, you're very correct. And this is very important. Went unarrested for some time.
Well, until public opinion, MSNBC people and a whole bunch of other people, it demanded that he be tried.
Well, people like you and me.
Yeah.
Said perhaps that something might be amiss. Because a young dark-skinned man with a hoodie carrying only a can of iced tea and a package of Skittles was shot dead by a white guy.
Well, I'm telling you, those now, Skittles, man.
Right. So Zimmerman was eventually arrested. He went to trial. And, of course, the jury, as I mentioned earlier, acted in the only way it could. Zimmerman was acquitted. Justice was done. God bless America. Let's move on.
Did you see the reports of juror number whatever the hell, this woman who's essentially said?
No, actually, I didn't see
that. What was her number, 57?
Well, tell me about her. B-57. Tell me about her.
Well, she's got a book deal. She's going to make a profit off of this whole thing. She essentially said, well, she knew he was guilty, and wasn't a problem for her from the get-go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he was black, he wore a hoodie, and he, you know, what he was, you know.
Precisely. That's what I've been saying. Ah. Haven't you been listening?
No.
So.
I don't listen to nonsense.
Zimmerman case is proof that the American justice system is intact, that it works, that our entire constitutional framework is exactly as it should be.
Wait a minute. Stand your ground laws are the basis of his acquittal.
Yeah.
Zimmerman's acquittal. Okay. Who invented stand your ground?
Stand your ground is an extension of established legal principle.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of something called the Castle Doctrine?
Yes. A man's home is his castle.
Right. Precisely. This was determined.
If somebody comes to my door and tries to break in, I get to shoot them. I don't even object to that. I think that's okay.
You know, I would agree with that. You know, if someone is busted into your house.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you are entitled to defend your house.
Well, I know you are.
Right.
As long as they're inside.
So stand your ground laws are an extension of the Castle Doctrine. They say, essentially, that same principle applies anytime you're someplace you have a right to be.
Well, wait a minute. Does that mean like you know, some guy gives me some, you know, some...
Some grief.
Some grief, thank you. And I happen to have a gun and I can just shoot him on the spot?
Yeah, if you're scared, if you feel you have a reasonable fear for your life.
The law for self-defense, et cetera, says you get to run away. You're supposed to run away.
That's called an obligation to retreat.
Yes.
That's something that stand your ground laws did away with.
Wait a minute. You mean I can be act like a real jerk, carry a gun, walk down the street, bump into people, create a hassle, and if somebody challenges me, I get to shoot them?
Yeah, okay, let's see your let's say it's late at night and you're hungry.
Okay.
So you walk down to the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And you get yourself a snack.
Okay.
And you walk out of the 7-Eleven.
Okay.
And there outside of the 7-Eleven are a couple of dark-skinned youths in hoodies.
Well, they could even be white-skinned youth. Let's be fair.
Well, then you probably wouldn't be scared.
Oh, okay.
That's very important. It's all about how you feel.
I see.
About how you feel.
Dark, scary, light, not scary.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, okay. I'm beginning to get a picture here.
Here, there's the dark-skinned youths.
Yes.
You feeling kind of scared.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, one of them asked you for a cigarette.
I'm scared because I don't really have a cigarette.
Right.
Okay.
Before stand your ground laws came along, you would have had an obligation to leave that situation if you felt
endangered. Perhaps go back into the 7-Eleven.
Perhaps go out in the 7-Eleven. Perhaps ignore them and be on your way as quickly as possible.
Yeah, maybe even run away. Run away is one of my favorite tactics.
Right. And the logic behind that assumption, faulty logic clearly, as I'll explain in a moment, is that by removing yourself from the situation, you dramatically reduce the chance that you or someone else will end up injured or dead.
Yeah.
And,
makes sense to me.
Right. In the eyes of the law, that was deemed a better outcome than somebody being injured or dead.
Yeah, but you lose your honor.
Right. See, that's why stand your ground laws are so brilliant. Now, if you're in a stand your ground state, you don't have to leave. You can whip out your weapon.
I think we're going in a very weird direction here. Okay.
No, what are you talking about?
Never mind. Go ahead. Go ahead.
You're implying that there's some sort of metaphor between handguns and penises. I'm just not buying it. I am just not buying it. You can whip out your weapon. You can shoot those two dark-skinned, hooded sweatshirt-wearing youths, and the law will be on your side.
Even though they didn't really, really, really menace you, really?
Well, what's important, Joe, is that you felt menaced.
I felt menaced.
Yes.
Well, that's what's really important. I often have felt menaced.
Yeah.
So I guess I can shoot anybody. No, Oregon doesn't have stand your ground.
No, Oregon does not have stand your ground, but...
We need that.
No, I don't think we do. But Oregon, according to this analysis here, by the International Business Times, Oregon falls into that category of states that permit the use of deadly force in self-defense in public with no duty to retreat through a combination of statutes, judicial decisions, and or jury instructions.
Oh, you mean I can do this
so
in Oregon?
There's no explicit stand your ground here, stand your ground law here. But existing precedent would be on your side if you decided to stand your ground in Oregon.
This very much reminds me of the old black codes that came after the Civil War, which required that African Americans have a job, which there might not be. And if they didn't, then they would get arrested as vagrants, and then their labor would be hired out to private contractors at very good rates.
It's almost as if you're saying the legal code was drafted in such a way as to favor one class of people over another.
Well, it's called black codes for a reason.
All right. So I rest my case. Zimmerman.
Wait a minute, you're
was
resting
innocent.
Your case?
Zimmerman was innocent. He acted within the bounds of the law. Our justice system vindicated him, and he has gone rightfully free.
Well, who in? Wait a minute. Let's get. Who? Zimmerman did get his gun back.
Well, right. The Second Amendment. Hello. Well, he has a right to that gun.
Yeah, without...
Right. Now, you're asking me, where did this law come from?
Yeah, where did this law come from?
The Florida Stand Your Ground Law was drafted by a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Wait a minute. The American Legislative Exchange Council?
ALEC, they're called. ALEC. This is a group of people, lawyers, and other interested folks, largely conservative. In fact, entirely conservative.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And they across the country...
Rich. Okay.
They have drafted a series of what they call model laws.
Yeah.
And they have circulated these to state legislatures around the country.
Yes.
And this has led to...
Yeah, they tuck $100 bills in with their circulation, you know.
Well, that makes the law even more appealing, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does for me.
And they circulated these model pieces of legislation to state legislators around the country.
Yes.
And this has resulted in a number of states adopting laws very similar to one another so that there's sort of a uniformity among the states.
Well, I like uniformity of law.
It's a really efficient way to disseminate conservative legal principles. I got to hand it to them. It's brilliant.
Yeah, but I don't see where political conservatism and the ability to blow people away when you could retreat, it seems to me the conservative thing to do is walk away.
You're not following me.
Oh, sorry.
See, because Trayvon Martin was dark-skinned.
Oh.
George Zimmerman is light-skinned.
Lighter.
George Zimmerman had a gun.
He was bigger.
Trayvon Martin didn't.
George Zimmerman was bigger. I mean, larger, physically larger.
George Zimmerman is a grown man. Trayvon Martin, a 17-year-old boy. George Zimmerman is alive. Trayvon Martin is dead.
Dead.
God bless the USA.
Okay.
Let's take some phone calls.
All right.
503-231-8187. Randy, good morning.
Yeah,
hello.
Let me get off speaker here.
Okay.
Good idea.
Okay. I like to listen to KBOO to see what you guys are saying, all your hosts at 8 o'clock. But I get discouraged from listening because, as illustrated in the last dialogue between you two,
yes,
a long string of misinformation and lies.
Wait a minute. What lies? What misinformation? I'm biting on your temptation.
Please, enlighten us.
Well, in your narrative of what happened, you left out the most salient point of all, that Martin was in the process of killing Zimmerman.
Martin was in the process of killing Zimmerman.
How was that?
Do you have any firsthand information? I mean, like, did you watch any parts of the trial? Or
oh, I watched all the trial, yeah. It was exciting. I listened to it, actually.
What about the injuries to Zimmerman? Why did you you didn't even mention it.
Well, they got.
He had
we
some
mentioned
scratches.
That they got into a physical altercation.
Yeah,
can
I mean,
be
what do you
reasonably
do you
extrapolated that one or both might have injuries? In fact, Trayvon,
well,
I think, suffered a bullet wound to the heart.
Excuse me. You said extrapolated that one or both.
Uh-huh.
Here's the facts. The facts are that the only injuries besides the gunshot on Martin were bruised knuckles.
Hmm.
The injuries on Zimmerman were serious and potentially deadly.
Oh, my. Wow, so Zimmerman's hovering on the brink of death then.
Is this news to you?
Well, yeah, it's actually news to me and probably news to 99% of the people. You know, let me just say one thing. I saw a chunk of concrete that nobody argued was anywhere necessarily on the scene. There was no evidence that it was there. That allegedly was the kind of concrete that Zimmerman's head was bashed against, though there was no indication whatsoever that Zimmerman had a reasonable fear for his life, especially since he was chasing the kid.
Another falsity. That isn't true.
Zimmerman wasn't chasing the kid?
He was not chasing the kid. He was surprised by Martin.
Where did you get that?
He followed the Martin for several blocks in his car before getting out and following him on foot against the advice of the police.
Let's get back to the injuries. This is the
Wait, we'll get back to the injuries in just a second. I want to get someplace first. You say that Zimmerman suffered these injuries as a result of the physical altercation with Trayvon Martin. I say Zimmerman got into a physical altercation with Trayvon Martin because he explicitly refused to follow the directives of the police in this case, chased down a kid who was minding his own business, and harassed him for essentially no reason other than his own misguided racist paranoia, and as a result, the kid is dead. So any injuries that Zimmerman may have suffered seem superfluous to this argument to me.
And there were no... Zimmerman didn't go to the hospital. Zimmerman didn't even go to the doctor.
So your claim that he was in the process of being killed seems spurious at best. Go ahead.
Let me describe what the testimony was.
All right.
Which was corroborated by the one eyewitness we have, Mr. Good. And it was also corroborated by ear witnesses, plus the physical evidence, all joined together to this scenario. Martin was on top of Zimmerman, pounding his face with his fists, MMA style. He was seated on his chest, and Zimmerman's mm-hmm. head was against the concrete. Look at the pictures, go online, look at the photos of Zimmerman's head, the back of his head, and the front of his face. His life was in danger.
Mm-hmm. His life was in danger because he chased down an unarmed black kid and assaulted
him.
It's
not illegal to follow someone and keep an eye on him, especially if you're a community watch guy and you're wondering what this guy's doing in his neighborhood. Yeah,
well, he was not actually in a community watch. Let's start with that. I get annoyed by this kind of argument. If Zimmerman had done what he was told by the authorities, if Zimmerman had not been a paranoid, crazy person chasing a guy for no reason at all except he was black and he didn't think he belonged in the neighborhood, none of this would have happened. This is a casebook study of paranoid racism. Come on, man. Give me a break here.
Let's assume, sorry to interrupt you, but let me give one more thing on the table here. Let's assume for a moment that you're correct, okay? Let's assume that in the course of this altercation, Trayvon got the better of Zimmerman and was in fact sitting astride him, beating him about the head, slamming his face into the concrete. Let's assume all that is true for a moment.
The back of his head, not his face. His face was exposed to Martin's fist.
All right, so let's assume for the sake of argument that all that was true. What might one say that Trayvon Martin was standing his ground in the face of an imminent threat when he
responded to
Zimmerman's
attack?
Why
wasn't he standing his ground? I mean, your argument is insane.
He assaulted Zimmerman.
I'm going to have to say this to you because I think it's really important that you think about it. Your event description and your approach to the problem is inherently contradictory to the reasonable attitudes of any citizen anywhere. And I have to ask you this. Would you chase down some black guy in your neighborhood because you thought he might be up to no good?
If I see someone in my neighborhood that arouses suspicion, I may...
What do you mean arouses suspicion? Explain what you're talking about. Was he breaking into houses? Was he smashing cars? Was he peeing on the lawn? What are you talking about?
Well, I'm sure you
know. No, you're driving me crazy. I can't believe it. Arousing suspicion. The dude was walking down the street. Where's the suspicion? The suspicion rests in the fact that he was black and had a hoodie. That's it.
Yeah. No, that isn't it.
Well, come on. Give me some other example.
Why? All right, let's. Why did Zimmerman follow him in the first place?
I'm trying to say something, but you guys keep jumping in. I can't even.
Please, you're driving me crazy. Sorry.
Continue.
Please continue with your incredibly clever argument.
These aren't. Nothing I've offered is anything but facts that came out presented in court. I haven't said anything that's opinion, or I haven't mentioned Skittles. I haven't mentioned hoodies. You guys keep focusing on that trivial stuff.
Well, no, it's not trivial stuff, because it is in context that this crime, which is no longer apparently a crime, took place. And you seem to be arguing, and this is what's upsetting me, that anybody can chase down anybody and shoot them if one has in their head the idea that the person one's chasing might be up to no good. Is that really what you're saying? Never mind the trial. Just tell me, do you really believe that somebody walking down the street should be chased down and checked out and confronted and, if necessary, if they resist or offer real resistance, be shot? Is that really what you're saying?
Of course not. That's absurd.
But no, yes, it is absurd, but that's what you're saying.
That is not what I'm saying. I never said I'm recording this. I've never said anything of the sort.
You're recording this? Oh, no, he's recording this.
Well, let me ask you this.
Hey, we're recording it too, buddy. We got a recording. Our recording will match your recording any night.
What?
No, I'm fed up with this nonsense.
Was George Zimmerman's suspicion of Trayvon Martin justified? Did he have reason to be suspicious of his activity?
He was just simply keeping an eye on him because he was a stranger in the neighborhood, and there's been a lot of crime in the
neighborhood. Turns out he wasn't a stranger in the neighborhood. That's number one. Number two, he chased him. He chased him with his car. Then he got out of his car even after he was told not to get out of his car, and he chased him down the street. There's plenty of evidence of that, which was introduced in court. And what you're really saying is that when the altercation took place, the altercation took place in some abstract way that had nothing to do with previous events, that Martin had no reason to be afraid, and you just, I'm sorry, man, you're making me crazy.
You have not watched the trial. It's as clear as a bell.
Well, yeah, like I said earlier, justice was clearly done. Thank you for your call.
All right.
503-231-8187.
I'm sorry. I can't handle it.
Yeah. It's
weird.
It's nauseating on almost
every
level. No,
it's too weird. It's so weird. I mean, according to the logic of stand your ground, you can provoke violence when you have a superior weapon, and then when that violence in fact takes place, if indeed it was the violence so described in court, because dead men tell no tales, if that violence takes place, you can then blow the person who you've been chasing away.
It's like a weird version of extortion, isn't it?
Well, it's weird. It's just so weird. It's so weird. It makes me think that what I need to do is have an armored suit, you know, lots of Kevlar, and some kind of big fat weapon whenever I go anywhere, because I might be mistaken for a bad guy.
It's true.
Well, no, I don't have to worry about it. My skin is so white.
You know, or you might see a bad guy.
I might see a bad guy.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to address a couple of neglected points.
Please.
First, Zimmerman is a jerk. Who should never have been allowed to carry a gun. Wannabe authority figures, wannabe cops. These guys should be psychologically profiled accurately. I mean, he was not a peace officer. He was not a sworn officer or trained officer in any way. Second point. This tragedy was set in motion by burglaries, ostensibly committed by black criminals. The individuals who committed these burglaries, whoever they were the ones who set in motion the forces that created this ongoing tragedy. Now, in all major cities with a large so-called minority population, Chicago, Detroit, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, L.A., etc., there is a general perception, I say again, a general perception of the black population as a perpetual criminal underclass that is armed illegally and antagonistic toward white society and whites in general.
Yeah, that's the paranoia that undergirded Zimmerman's actions.
In order to correct or counter this bias, the responsible members of the black community should be constantly and emphatically speaking out against the glorification of criminality that is a major constant characteristic of so-called ghetto culture.
This seems a little bit like blaming the victim here to me.
Just a moment. All right. I'm not blaming the victim. I'm stating a fact in terms of a general perception. Now, there is a huge proliferation of illegal handguns. Now, this situation is encouraging government and law enforcement to exercise fascist methods of control. You know, stop and frisk, etc.
Yeah.
Ostensibly to stem the flow of handguns. Now, I heard a statistic reported on the station that in the course of years, there have been 5 million stop and frisk incidents. Now, they say that less than 1% produced illegal guns. 1% of 5 million is 50,000 guns. Now, I know for a fact, through personal experience, guns are everywhere.
Yeah.
And the so-called minority populations, I mean, these guns are ubiquitous. Now, by the way, the hoodie assures anonymity. Consider that. Now, I'm not blaming the victim. Hold on now. Let me finish. There's no need to interrupt me. I'll be finished in a moment.
All right.
That's what I'm saying, all right?
All right.
Now, I'm stating what is generally known and felt, not what is discussed in the press or in the media. I'm talking about a general perception. You can argue with that all you want, but it's about time people started facing this fact that the black population and Latino populations are characterized, air quotes on that, are characterized as a perpetual criminal underclass.
All right. I will agree with you there. I will agree with you that, yes, that these populations are characterized as a perpetual criminal underclass. Where I disagree with you is that it is these populations' responsibility to correct that misperception. It is not their responsibility to correct that misperception. It is the so-called majority's responsibility to evolve, educate themselves, and rise above that misperception. That's where I disagree with you.
Well, what happens, I mean, how does this take place? I mean, how do you eradicate criminal behavior and the glorification of criminality?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
How do you eliminate criminal behavior and the glorification of criminality? You can't deny this exists.
Well, I will agree with you that there's a glorification of criminality in our society as a whole. As a nation, we do international criminal acts. I mean, if you want to really get into a profound discussion of violence and criminality, there's hardly any clean hands at all. But to particularly choose the victims of a system that is fundamentally racist and fundamentally classist, and then say, because those people have bad behaviors in response to their life experience and the passing down of a culture of fear, it's therefore reasonable to walk around and what are you saying, blow them away?
Wait, I want to answer your question here very quickly. You asked, how do you eradicate criminality? I would say by creating an excellent educational system, providing good health care to everybody, and making sure everybody has gainful employment. That would seem to me to be the best way to eradicate criminality.
But that is not what I'm emphasizing or saying.
Yeah.
More precisely to the point, I'm considering the general perception, once again,
mm-hmm.
that minority populations are classified as a criminal.
Yes, well, but that is a false perception.
With a false perception, and I agree that there is generally racism that makes that assumption. And there are statistical evidences that poor people, and this is really an important difference,
we know this.
And that poor people are prone to the kinds of crimes that are poorly planned and violent.
The two wrongs don't make a right. If the society in general, guilty of slavery and oppression and every other damn thing, really,
yeah.
If this is a fact. However, you have to face the severe biases that are fed by these negative situations.
So you want? I really am interested in what you're saying. You want the communities that are oppressed and that are discriminated against and that there's prejudice about to rise above the behaviors that are defensive and limitedly rational in view of the limits that these people face, and suddenly turn themselves around and magically act like white middle class people? Is that what you're thinking ought to happen in order to prevent this kind of violence?
No, that is not what I'm saying at all.
Okay, explain, please.
An acknowledgement within the minority communities that crime is creating. Forgive this analogy. They're all being tarred by the same brush.
Well, I find it hard to forgive it. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I have heard a lot of leaders within the black community over the years. I've been involved, as it happens, in civil rights struggles going back to when I was, 19. Well, let me finish. The thing is, I have never heard leaders of the black community, with the exception, actually, of H. Rapp Brown, ever advocating violence, direct violence against white people, period.
Well, I tell you this. Here's an incident in point in New York City.
Okay, can you wrap it up quickly? We need to give some others a chance.
Of course.
All right.
I've been aboard crowded subway trains.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, this. I'm not talking one or two isolated incidents. Many times, where black youths would say, "If I had my nine, I'd kill all these white MFs." Now, I'm not saying that distinguishes an entire community. But these things happen very, very often. The state of affairs in Detroit, Chicago, L.A., I mean, there are constant references to incidents that take place. This is a tragedy. But people have to, in general, people have to face the fact that this is the status quo.
Well, I rode the subways in New York. I lived in New York City. I saw a lot of disheveled, nutty, even potentially violent people. And I never thought that they were more or less one ethnic group or another. Anyway, I really appreciate your comment because it is interesting.
Yeah, and thanks for the call.
But I do think we're going to go on to other callers.
Indeed. All right, I want to read a quote here very quickly before I go back to the phones. This is from Gary Young writing in the Guardian of London.
The British, they have the baby and everything.
Mr. Young writes, appeals for calm in the wake of such a verdict raise the question of what calm there can possibly be in a place where such a verdict is possible. Parents of black boys are not likely to feel calm. Partners of black men are not likely to feel calm. Children with black fathers are not likely to feel calm. Those who now fear violent social disorder must ask themselves whose interests are served by a violent social order in which young black men can be thus slain and discarded.
Well, yeah, I think that's really true. And I think actually what Obama, who I've been very critical of, said just the other day is really also true. And what Holder said, look, if you're a black parent and you're at all responsible, you tell your kid how to behave in the face of authority. You don't. It's kind of hard to tell black kids, hey, how to behave in the face of any white man, because he might be carrying a gun and he might be standing his ground. But the fact of the matter is that being a person of color in the United States is well known by every defense attorney I've ever known, in the case of drivers, for example, as driving while Hispanic or driving while black. I mean, this is just a a terrible racist reality of our society. And people, I'm kind of amazed. People kind of want to rationalize it by saying, well, those people are bad. Those people are dangerous. I remember a Ray Bradbury story called The Black and White Game, which was about a baseball game. And black people got upset and because a guy was busted up at in the baseball game. And the game ended. And the white people were saying, oh, well, let's run away. Let's get away from here because black people have knives. I mean, look, racism is so endemic and so deeply rooted and so much a factor in what we're talking about. In fact, the last two calls kind of illustrate that. I don't really think this conversation would be taking place if it had been a white-on-white crime.
Yeah, and for the earlier caller who suggested that Zimmerman really was acting in self-defense, that he was in imminent danger of being killed, I will just say this. But for the fact that Zimmerman pursued him in the first place and provoked a confrontation, he would not have been in that situation.
And we, and you know, and again, dead men tell no tales.
Right. I've heard many members of the conservative commentariat criticize the president and others for making this case about race. The fact is, this case was very much about race for two reasons. A, it happened in the United States, and B, it happened in the old Confederacy. Of course it was about race. Of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, in fact, Zimmerman, in the conversations he had with the authorities, talked about these, and I can't use the word, but these people always get away with
they
it.
They always get away with it.
If that ain't racist, what is?
Coming up
the N-word, the famous N-bomb.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Chris Hedges speaks on the corporate coup d'etat. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with journalist and author William Grider about the possible nomination of Lawrence Summers to be the next chair of the Federal Reserve Bank.
Lawrence Summers, he's showed bias against women and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. Oh. And we'll hear excerpts of the documentary film Precious Knowledge on the Ethnic Cleansing of Mexican Studies from the Tucson School System. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts talks with members of the production of Sam Shepard's True West at Our Shoes Are Red / The Performance Lab. And we'll have a commentary by Eastern Oregon writer Bing Bingham. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan speaks with the curator of graphic arts at the Portland Art Museum, Mary Weaver Chapin. The topic is artists, books, all this and more coming up today on KBO. Oh, let's go back to the phones. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. Dead men do tell tales.
Hmm.
The dead boy was examined. He had clean hands. His knuckles were not bruised. He did not grab a hold of Zimmerman's head and pound it into anything. His iced tea was still in his pocket. His earbuds, his cell phone earbuds were still in his ears. He did not fight. So the case that he did not have even the right to self-defense, they're saying that he did self-defend himself, and so therefore he is guilty of attacking Zimmerman, is totally false. But they have played on this. He had clean hands. How can they say that he fought Zimmerman in this brutal way? And they make this entire case on that.
Well, in fact, since you brought this evidential issue up, the police totally didn't do the right thing. They should have bagged Zimmerman's hands. They should have bagged Martin's hands. They should have done some lab work right off the bat on that, given the so-called self-defense
should have
argument.
Cut their hands off and bagged them?
No, you don't.
Okay.
You just put a plastic bag off of that.
Scared me there for a second.
With tape or a rubber band, and then you examine the tissue. Sorry. Anyway, none of the usual forensic science that is available in the modern police world was carried out, and the actual arrest and so on was really happened as an afterthought when there was enormous pressure brought to bear.
Right, but the examination had already taken place, and the report is that there were no marks on Trayvon's hands.
Well, that's true.
Not have hit anybody.
Well, not with any force. Let's just say he could have tapped him.
Yeah, maybe he tapped him. But part of the problem is I have heard black men and even his friend who he's talking to on the phone has said that you know, that Zimmerman couldn't take a whooping. Well, that just feeds into the Zimmerman apologists who are saying, well, he had a right to attack Trayvon because Trayvon attacked him. But Trayvon didn't attack anybody.
No, I think your point is really, as far as I can tell, you're correct. And I think that, again, really what's really important here is that the jury was essentially told that stand your ground was a reasonable defense. The judge did not allow any testimony about the stalking behavior of Zimmerman prior to the murder.
Right.
And all of that makes the context and the consequences and the very real totality of the crime unavailable to the jurors. And the jurors, it was a foregone conclusion that Zimmerman would beat the rap.
Yeah, set up.
Yeah, really.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, yeah, thank you. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
All right, who's next? Who's next? Dave, good morning.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, what's on your mind, Dave?
Hey, I'd just like to say a quick comment because I know we're running out of time here. And that is that I think that your show sounds a lot like Fox and CNBC in the sense that it's conducting social engineering.
What do you mean, social engineering?
Well, you're using trauma-based mind control and opportunity.
I think you're giving us too much credit, man. I really do.
Convince people to, you know, shy away from gun rights, and also to, you know, give the federal government more control.
Wait. You think we're... I just want to be sure that I understood you. You think that Abe and I are engaging in kind of like some kind of mind control thing?
I think that you're an East Coast brainwasher with ties to covert social engineering programs that seek divide the population and achieve more control at the national level.
Dude, you're on to us. You figured it out.
Are you related to Leon Uris, by the way?
Actually not.
I am. I'm his illegitimate redheaded stepchild.
Okay. Well, you know, I compliment you on the subtleness of the way you're, you know, going about this. And it's just a shame to hear it on KBOO. And I kind of wish you'd move back to the East Coast along with Nick Fish.
Yeah, man. This master plan has taken
Nick
a
Fish.
Long time to
Nick
put
Fish
into place.
Nick Fish
is
my secret
ahead,
son.
Punch the conspiracy theory button. You know, punch that operant conditioning phrase.
Well, I just want to know if wait. Are you kidding or are you serious?
No, I'm dead serious. I think that, you know, this country is sliding down into the tubes because of people like you. And I used to love KBOO. And when I hear a show like this that's sensationalizing this case, you know, that is basically using it to control people's minds and shape their opinion towards ends that really are moving toward national socialism, it grieves me deeply.
Well, hey, listen, I really appreciate hearing from you, and I'll keep a watch on myself so that I don't get tricked again.
I think at the end there he was laughing and saying he was kidding. That's what
it
sounded like to me.
I think he was kidding.
Well,
never know.
I know, but what that call really reflects is a failure to appreciate just how much work and planning has gone into executing this master mind control plan. You think this is easy? Do you think we just dropped into these chairs?
I don't know about it. That means you're the guy in control.
Now you begin to understand.
I may have to stand my ground and take you out, dude.
503-231-8187 is the number to call the hypnosis hotline at KBOO. James, good morning. This should be good.
Good morning.
Hey.
It is the progressive left in America who have enabled international slave traders.
Oh, yeah, it is. Go ahead.
To keep African Americans in bondage in America. And African Americans are still in bondage and have never been freed as a direct result of regulatory policy administered by our central government.
Okay, I just want to be very clear here. You're saying international slave traders, I want to write this down, are keeping African Americans enslaved. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, they usurped our central government from the top during our Civil War.
Okay, international slave traders control the government, enslaving African Americans. Go ahead.
Through the Bank of England.
Through the Bank of England. Oh, my God. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yes. Through the Bank of England, look up Rothschild Octopus.
Oh, man. Why didn't I see this?
Wait a minute. Rothschild was Jewish. Isn't this a Jewish conspiracy?
Well, what this is a they're a gang of international slave traders and genocidal monsters who established central banks.
James, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, but we're out of time. I'm sorry, but we're out of time.
Actually, it's good to end
James,
on this note.
You know, I appreciate your call, James, but I got to tell you, inevitably, reality is going to crash up against your belief system hard. And it's going to be really painful, man.
Keep brace yourself. Believing is good. Believing is good. You know, what the hell if he wants to believe in octopuses? Octopuses are very smart animal.
All right, stand your ground, Oregonians. You never know when you have to defend yourself.
And stay tuned to KBOO. And just remember, this show was real.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The Portland Surfrider Foundation advocates for strong marine water quality regulations, adequate water quality monitoring, reporting, and posting, and for the reduction of polluted discharges into the ocean. It currently has two active clean water campaign initiatives in the Newport and Cannon Beach areas. In support of their efforts, the Surfrider Summer Soiree is being held July 20th.